This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's glad to be back in the old hot seat after 2 weeks. It's been a long time off. We had graduation ceremony for one Saturday. I could not be here. We actually ran three graduations, one at the Tysons Corner area. We ran one in Baltimore and one in Glen Allen. And all of our campuses, participated in one or the other of those.
Sure.
We also have one in New Delhi, but that one is held at a different time of year. Mm-hmm. And so it was a very inspiring time. When our students graduate, it's really the high point, certainly for all the staff and faculty, because it's like everybody's launched and they're so happy. And we had student speakers at all of these events. And I've got to admit, the student speakers are always the best. They're better than the keynote, actually.
Yeah, really.
I'm beginning to think we should just get rid of all keynotes and only have student speakers because they are so, so inspiring.
Not a bad idea.
And there's been a lot of stuff going on in technology. HP is, like, very proud of the fact they're inventing a new kind of computer. HP's kind of getting back to their old mojo.
They were kind of on the ropes for a while, weren't they?
They were on the ropes, but they're trying to do something quite nice. I think even Bill Hewlett and Dave Packard would be proud of them. FBI's into face recognition big time. There's also Google has also been trying to develop techniques to encourage more girls to go into coding because, you know, Google's been criticized that they have mostly men and mostly white men and not many minorities, maybe some Asians. And so they're trying to have more diversity in their ranks. It just happened that's who they were hiring, so they're trying to change that. And they said one of the problems is getting more women. There just aren't enough women entering computer science, so they're trying to encourage young girls to get into computer science to show them how good it is. You been watching the World Cup?
I can't get into soccer, Doc. I mean, I'm sure you are because you're more of an international guy than I am, but I don't get it.
You know, I've noticed women like soccer much better than men.
I think I know why that is.
Have you noticed that?
It's uniforms.
It's the uniforms. Uh-huh. I know. And all the women are saying, yeah, World Cup's really good. But I just haven't seen many men into it. But this year, they have a new technology on the goal line. They actually have electronic techniques to decide whether it was really a goal.
Oh, no kidding.
Because there were been a lot of cases where goals were claimed or goals were denied in the past, and when they went back and studied the videotape, they discovered the ref made the wrong call, and it changed some major, major competitions.
Well, this could save lives because there's so much violence in soccer when these things go awry. You have these soccer riots and everything, you know? How do you feel about, let me ask you this, technology is pervading sports, where it used to be you played a game and it was all the human element. It's the athletes and it's the referees, and you relied on everyone's abilities and senses in order to see what happened. Now we've got review in football, in baseball, we've got this thing in soccer. I mean, what do you think
of
that?
Well, once we start televising and once they have replays, after the fact that show that there was a mistake made, it sort of forces the reps to sort of, accommodate that. If we didn't have television replays, nobody would be quite sure and they wouldn't really study it to the nth degree. But I think the key with sports, you can't delay the action.
That's the problem.
So
it just brings everything.
What they did with, what they did with the World Cup that was very clever was they have the referee wears a little device on his wrist, and if it's a goal, it buzzes.
Mm-hmm.
And so to the audience.
Oh, wow. So they don't have to go back and go under the hood and
they
look
don't
at
have
this.
To go look at it. They actually have 14 cameras that focus in on the ball, it does the immediate calculation, and it rings, and he gets a buzzer, and he can call it a goal. And see, so the thing that's so difficult with soccer, I'll have to give the whole story now since we got into it.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Because you take the ball has to be entirely in the net.
Okay.
And it's got to pass over that front bar. Well, sometimes the ball passes over the front bar, but the goalie kicks it out so fast, you can't really tell did it all make it over the bar or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an illusion depending on the angle. So now they track it with 14 cameras, and that was one of the issues. They did not want to have the flow of the game interrupted. So the referee gets this little buzz, and he knows that it was a goal, and he calls it. And the spectators can't even tell that there's any technology interspersed with this. I think that's really a great way
to
do it.
That's the thing, because instant replay just brings baseball and football to a grinding halt when they have to go walk off the field. The umpires go under headsets. Somebody is in baseball and somebody's looking at this thing, and nothing happens for 5 minutes.
I know.
But this is actually great because in soccer, I guess it's so much easier because it's black or white. It crosses a line or it doesn't. And cross the line.
It's that simple. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing they use it for. There's no other technology. There's no instant replay on anything. Everything else is the ref's decision, and it's not overridden. But you see, at the last World Cup, there was one game, and the ref made an error, and it changed the results of the whole tournament, and people are just up in arms over that. So that's why they put the technology in. We're also going to feature a guy who came up with the Hollerith card.
I have no idea what that is.
It's the card that has all the holes in it. The computer punch
card. Oh, the computer punch cards. Okay.
The Hollerith card is a computer punch card.
I had no idea what they were called.
And so he actually named after Herman Hollerith.
Who we'll talk about later.
Yeah, we're going to feature him, and he was one of the guys. His company was one of the formation companies that formed ultimately IBM.
I don't know how Hermit made it into Profiles in IT because he does not have a middle name. Everybody in Profiles in IT.
All have a middle name, and I tried to contact his mother, but I couldn't get. See, he was born in 1860.
That would probably explain a few.
Yeah,
things.
So I couldn't find his mom. So he has an interesting story, and that was sort of the beginning of Profiles in IT. And of course, it was a huge mailbag.
For a while. Wait.
Giant.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Thank you, Mr. Big Voice. Let me get it up here. Oh,
man.
Huge.
Crazy.
Huge.
We can take a break so you can get a breather.
Yeah, these are heavy, heavy electrons. We got an email from Arnie in Davisonville, Maryland. Hi, Dr. Schertz. Hi, Dr. Schertz. He's a longtime listener, so
funny. I like that you differentiated because I'm not sure there's a Davidsonville, Virginia.
I don't know. I just want to be clear on that.
I think we need to
that.
Check that out.
Check that out. More info for your listeners on Tech Talk. I don't know how big your drone is. See, Arnie,
that sounds like
Arnie likes all
question.
The drone stuff, and I don't know about how you do all your Wi-Fi stuff with your drone while driving, or your Wi-Fi searching with your drone while driving around in your car. And does your drone have pepper spray or lasers on it?
Are you kidding me?
Because, Arnie sent me this newspaper article where a South African company has received its first order for a drone that can fire pepper spray bullets. And it also features blinding lasers, apparently for crowd control.
Incredible.
I went to the link that Arnie sent me, and that drone looks deadly. My drone actually has no weapons on it at all; just has a camera. Now the camera is sort of oval shaped. It looks like a hand grenade, but actually it's a camera. It's a camera. So my drone is completely safe.
It doesn't look at all like a hand grenade.
Mine is completely safe, but they do jam my Wi-Fi when I fly it around the Maryland State Capitol. They don't like that.
You learn that the hard way.
Now, Arnie also said, did you know that in June 8th, 1887, Herman Hollerith applied for a U.S. patent for a punch card calculator, 1887. And did you know that that in 1911, IBM was founded as a computing tabulation recording company in Endicott, New York. So all of those were kind of related. And so thanks, Arnie, for that tip. I went back and looked at Herman Hollerith, and we're going to feature him today. So
I was going to say, this is all coming together now.
It's all kind of coming together, and it was, Arnie pointed me in that direction, and so it was a great, great idea. I got an email from Dick Conway in Annandale. Dear Dr. Schertz, I'm sure you must have seen this, but this is a fascinating 12-minute video on quadcopters on TED. And he sent me a link to the TED video, and Dick Conway in Annandale. Well, Dick, that is a fantastic TED Talk. I have looked at that TED Talk, and it is these drones actually do acrobatic things. He actually balances a broomstick on top of one drone, and it's able to fly with it. He puts a glass of water on top of one, and he flies it around in very sharp, very tight maneuvers, yes. And the water doesn't spill. Now, what they did there, they actually put white balls as marker points on the drone and also, say, on the broom that it was balancing. They had external cameras track where these marker balls were. Then they had an external computer do all the calculations on what the drone would have to do to get the right behavior. And then it fed that information back to the drone. So these drones did not actually have self-contained processing. But it was quite an impressive display because he had five or six drones flying around in this small space, and that's a great video, that 12-minute TED video. And it does show you the potential of quadcopters. Uh-huh. Now, I have to say, my drone is self-contained. All the processing is done within the drone. It doesn't need any external computer. But it can't do anything quite as fancy as they showed in that TED Talk video. We got an email from Feroz in Fredericksburg. Dear Doc and Jim, I recently got a laptop with Windows 8. I missed the classic start menu that I used when I had Windows 7. How can I get it back? Thanks, Feroz in Fredericksburg. Well, Feroz, many, many people have had this same request because people are just kind of fed up with they're just not used to the Windows 8 layout because Windows 8 was really designed for touch screen and many people don't even have a touch screen. So it's sort of like, well, why do I have this hybrid when I don't need it? Mm-hmm. And they like to go back to the old tried and true classic. Well, you can download and install Classic Shell. Now, Classic Shell provides a collection of features that were available on older versions of Windows but were removed in the newer versions. It has the Classic Start menu, for instance. You can download it either from classicshell.net or you can go to CNET Downloads and download it there. And I've got to say, CNET has given it a 5-star rating, and it's free. It's open source software, and it's free. And it's gotten great reviews. If you want to get that tried and true look again, download Classic Shell from classicshell.net. We got an email from Tung in Ohio.
Oh, I sense danger.
Oh, my goodness. Dear Tech Talk, how can I email to a cell phone? I frequently need to reach a coworker.
Yeah.
My coworker's name is Carrot Top.
Well, I'm telling you.
That's weird. Carrot Top, or co-worker's name. And Carrot Top only reads text messages and never answers her cell phone.
The Carrot Top I know tells bad jokes. Oh,
yeah,
never mind.
Yeah, that's right. Is there a way that I can, a lot of times I don't have my cell phone with me and I need to contact her. I just have my computer. Is there a way I could send her an email and it would show up as a text message?
And, of course, the answer is yes.
Yes, there is. Love the show, Tung in Ohio. Well, Tung, there is good news. You can do that. You have to email what is called the SMS Gateway. SMS Gateway. And each cell phone company has their own gateway. So if you want to do it to T-Mobile, you would go to the phone number at tmomail.net. Or if you'd like to do Verizon, you would do the phone number at vtext.com. Or if you'd want to do AT&T, you would do the phone number at text.at&t.net. Now, every cell phone provider's got a different gateway. So if you want to look at the gateways, just simply look up SMS gateway and then put in your cell provider's name. Google that, and you'll come right up with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're still limited to the same 140 characters. So if you send an email, don't put in a subject because that you won't have enough room for your message.
Right.
Just forget the subject. Go to the body of the email. And anything longer than 140 characters gets truncated, so you can't send a long email.
Just act like you're sending a text.
And it really works great. I have people text me like that from their computer all the
sure.
time. You can also go to these sites, by the way, and you could register an alias. So instead of people putting in your phone number at, say, vtext.com, they could have an alias. You could go in an alias like Tree Man. You could put in your phone, you could register, say, the word Tree Man with your phone number, and then people could email treeman@vtext.com, and it will come right to your phone.
That's an interesting code name that you'd come up with right off the top of your head. I'm not sure why.
It's Tree Man. I don't know where, really, Jim, I don't know where that came from.
What time did you get up to work on the show this morning?
I got up very, very early.
But
I got to say, when I was young, I did. I love to climb trees. And I was climbing trees all the time. And, you know, the one time we lived in this, my dad was going to school. We lived in this, like, the student housing complex. And I used to climb the tree and run around on the top of this two-story building. And I'd run around up there. I'd climb the tree, run around on the roof, then I'd climb down. I thought this was really the greatest amount of fun.
Uh-huh.
So one time I got up there. I was running back and forth on the roof having fun up there. And then I came down the tree. And when I got down to the ground, there were two policemen waiting for me.
Oops.
Apparently, I'd been turned in.
Wow.
So my dad had to come and I don't know how we got into that.
How
Jim.
Old were you when you did
this? I was maybe 7 or so, but
wow.
You know, it's you know, my life of crime started early.
Your misspent life.
So maybe that's why Tree Man came to mind. Dear Dr. S, I work at a large agency.
NSA.
And this is a regular listener, and I sit in an open bullpen, elbow to elbow with others. The seating is just like being on an airplane. There's zero privacy, zero quiet, zero productivity. The 24-year-old who sits next to me is always on her cell phone 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
And I'm expected to do work that takes concentration, deep thinking, and analysis. Another guy agrees with me, and she sent me this article about the issues with, you know, close open seating.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to say, regular listener, this is normally not a tech talk issue, but I do have a technical suggestion.
You know, and your suggestion is exactly what I was thinking.
You need a noise cancellation headset.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like when I go on a long flight overseas and there's, say, a baby right behind me that's crying, it's really hard to sleep. But if I put on my noise cancellation headphones, I hear nothing.
Well, if you were in first class, you wouldn't have to worry about this.
I know. Well, no, they allow babies in first class if they pay.
Babies don't have jobs. How could they pay for?
I know. Well, that's no. But babies have been in first class,
okay.
and it actually.
So what you're telling me is you're in first class.
Well, no, I'm not in first class. I kind of peek up through the curtains to see what's going on up there how the other half lives. So I have Quiet Comfort 15 acoustic noise cancellation headphones. This is Quiet Comfort 15 acoustic noise cancellation headphones from Bose. BOSE. I love these. I just love these. This system, and it's retails for $299. Now the trouble with Bose, it's never discounted. It's going to be $299 anywhere.
Yeah.
I bought it for $299. Now, if you want to get designer color instead of the black,
right?
You can get that for only $399. But I'm not going to pay $100 to get a different color headset.
No, of course not.
No. So the $299, I tell you, they are fantastic. And the thing is, you can turn on the noise. They run on a AA battery, and you can turn on the noise cancellation and not even have music turned on.
Sure.
And it damps out the background noise. And you've just put a little bit of music on, you won't hear anybody.
And you know what? In no time, our regular listeners. Productivity will go up. Better job out of the cubicle.
That's right.
That's what I'm thinking.
But I've also got the thing, these cubes, I think this is a generational issue.
Yeah.
I think I think when you've been used to office and more privacy, it's difficult to be out and about. But I think the younger kids are used to it. They just put on their headphones and they're good to go. So I think it's a generational issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Bose noise cancellation headset is going to make your life much, much
worth
better.
The
yeah.
investment.
I'm going to tell you, we love all your emails.
Yep.
Just email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll get right back to you.
Absolutely. It is Saturday morning. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2. Stand by. Profiles in IT coming up, and lots more of our show on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University, and now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Big Voice. You're right on the money.
Well, he's had a break here. He could get it together.
I know. Today we're going to feature Herman Hollerith. Herman Hollerith, I don't know his middle name. Maybe you could Google
that.
See, why don't you work on that? Herman Hollerith developed a mechanical tabulator based on punch cards. He's regarded as the father of modern machine data processing. So he's one of the foundation guys. Herman Hollerith was born February 29th, 1860, in Buffalo, New York. Now, Herman is said to have been bright. This I did find a quote from his parents. Herman is said to be bright, but he did have the inability to spell easily. And he hated spelling.
Maybe that's why he doesn't have a middle name.
That could be. And whenever his teacher would start making him learn more spelling words and start putting the spelling pressure on him, he'd just skip class. So as finally his mom said, Herman? You check on his name. She said, Herman?
Fill in the blank. I can't find it. I've checked a number of sources.
Okay, Herman?
Yeah.
Herman, we were going to give you a middle name, but then we ran out of time. We ran out of time and we had to come up with something.
And you'd never be able to spell it.
So Herman, I'm really unhappy that you've been missing school. We're going to take you out of school and we're going to have you privately tutored by the Lutheran minister. And he'll keep you straight. So that's what they did. They pulled him out of school, and he was privately tutored in the home of the family's Lutheran minister. From that moment on, he could never cut class. He entered City College of New York in 1875, and he graduated from Columbia School of Mines. And his degree was Engineer of Mines.
What?
Engineer, this is M-I-N-E-S, not Mines, Mines. Engineer of Mines, and he got that degree in 1879 at age 19. Now, I don't
Are
know.
Are we talking about, coal mines or What kind of mines are we talking about?
It must be any kind of mine. This must be just a general mining degree.
Let's dive right back into
it. No, I actually don't know how he ever got into computers. Of course, they didn't have computers back then anyway, so he really couldn't think of it. In 1882, Hollera joined MIT, where he taught mechanical engineering, and he began conducting his first experiments with punched cards. In 1884, he began working at the United States Census Bureau, and he determined that data punched in a specific location on a card in the now familiar rows and column format could be counted and sorted mechanically. And so he applied for his first patent. He called it the Art of Compiling Statistics. He applied for that September 23rd, 1884. The patent was granted on January 8, 1889. A description of his system was submitted by Hollerith to Columbia University as his doctoral thesis. He completed his PhD from Columbia in 1890. In 1890, that same year, he got a contract from the Census Office to tabulate the census using his new technology. So they actually had a system where they, you got the age and the male or female, and so he created a system where people would just like punch with a pen. They would take the data that had been filled in the census, and they would punch through the thing, and they would actually create the card, the data card, as they were doing that. So he went and he applied the data card to the census, and it only took 1 year to calculate the census at the time. The prior census, done manually, took 8 years. That's why they only took a census every 10 years, because it took them 8 years to tabulate the results. Now, to make the system work, he invented the first automatic card feed mechanism, the first key punch. He also invented a tabulator, which actually tabulate this thing. He put in a plugboard panel control on his tabulator that it allowed it to do different jobs without being rebuilt, and so it could do something other than just tabulate a census. And that was the first step toward programming a computer. And I remember these cards, they were called Hollerith cards. They were later adapted for computer code. I remember I did my PhD dissertation. I was at a key punch tapping out these Hollerith cards, and I'd run my job at night with a big stack of cards. In 1896, Hollerith founded the Tabulating Machine Company, and his machines were used again in the 1900 U.S. Census. Hollerith's machines were used for censuses in England, Italy, Germany, Russia, Austria, Canada, France, Norway, all over the world. Now, this is the thing. When he was doing this, he lived in Georgetown.
Oh, no kidding.
His home was on 29th Street. His factory for manufacturing the tabulating machines was at 31st Street and C&O Canal.
Huh.
He wanted to be close to the Census Bureau, because, those are the guys
working
with the money.
At the Census Bureau. So.
In 1911, four corporations, including Hollerith's firm, merged to form the Computing Tabulating Recording Company, CTR. And under the presidency of Thomas J. Watson, it was renamed the International Business Machine Corporation in 1924, commonly known as IBM.
Would he be the Thomas J. Watson of Edison fame?
No, that's a different Watson.
Okay,
Hollerith died of a heart attack in Washington, D.C., November 17th, 1929. He's buried in the Oak Hill Cemetery in the Georgetown neighborhood of Washington, D.C. So there you go. Herman Hollerith.
An engineer of mines has to do with mining.
That's right.
As you would imagine.
That's right.
Look who just dragged it in. We left the door open.
Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
Don't stop. Make it pop. DJ
Gomez. When I hear this mentioned in the same paragraph, key punch and cemeteries, I figured you might want me to come by.
That's right.
You come by every week.
This is a very exciting show, Dave, and I'm glad you came down here to rescue the airwaves.
That's good stuff, Doc.
David, what is on your mind?
First day of summer. We keep punching already.
It's
summer school.
We're just a little punchy down here.
You know, Doc, I thought you'd be rejoicing. a day like today.
This is Summer School of the Airwaves.
It's Summer School of the Airwaves.
Summer School of the Airwaves.
Richard Schertz, right there.
Exactly.
There you go. The El Presidente.
El Presidente. Exactly, you know. Yeah. I'm going to be climbing trees later in the afternoon. Yeah,
you missed the whole tree climbing discussion. We won't go back.
We'll save that for the best hour.
We understand.
Yeah, that'll be
good stuff. I already flagged it on the wall and sack.
Put that yellow tape on the
wall. Yeah, exactly.
You know, Doc, you know, I know you're a big fan of the book, Robert Heinlein books, Fahrenheit 454, the whole thing, the drones,
right?
All the stuff that's coming true nowadays with drones, and how long do you think it will be before we have pilotless aircraft? Period. In other words, we'll have no more pilots in these $35 million jets. It'll all be remote. Some kid in Colorado will be flying these off aircraft carriers. I think that's coming faster than we ever dreamed.
It's coming. Well, actually, all the major airlines, they go on autopilot.
As soon as they get off the ground.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
they actually instrument landing. The pilot's just there in case something goes wrong.
You just program it in case something, you know,
the pilot makes the final adjustments, you know, just as they're coming in so you get this nice, smooth
I think the only reason
landing.
We don't have pilotless fighter jets right now is because of pilots. Because you're not putting me out of a job. Hey, wait a minute. You need me. No, you don't.
Well, we were just talking about drones being used for crowd control.
Yeah.
Drones armed with pepper spray and spray.
I read that. Pepper spray,
lasers. Yeah, they made out of a south. You know, I think drone. You know, the problem is, I think they're going to start regulating drones now, and I'm getting a little worried.
Oh, they're going to regulate
because,
them.
So you better have all the
because
fun.
I try to fly my drone. I'm going out later. If it's raining, I was going out to Great
don't
Falls today.
Don't you have an all-weather drone?
Well, I don't like to get it wet.
Okay, I
like to keep it dry.
You shouldn't get your drone wet, Dave.
No, you keep your drone dry.
I'm not going there.
Are you?
I am not going.
Are you IFR rated in the drone yet?
Yeah.
I
want to fly the drone over Great Falls and get close-ups of the waterfall.
Oh, that would be nice.
That's what I want to do.
But imagine your face if something mechanical went wrong.
Yeah, it would be. That would be
$1,200 drone
goes into the rocks.
That would be tragic.
Yeah, but these companies, Amazon's talking about using drones for delivery. Get out of here.
Yeah, that's never going to
happen.
Well, have you seen the autonomous vehicles that Google's making? They're driving them around.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah,
oh,
they do.
Great.
So Google just released a fleet of 25 of them, which are driverless cars. And so you get in their car. There's no steering wheel.
Yeah, I saw this. This is scary.
And there's no
stuff.
Brake.
Yeah,
you just get in this
stuff.
Thing, and you just punch in where you want to go. And it goes.
It's like an electric car.
There's a Google video of this thing. It looks like the car is made out of Adobe. It is like an upgraded golf cart.
It's made from a 3D printer, I'm sure.
It's
sort of shaped like a Volkswagen Bug.
Yeah.
And then they've got padding on the inside in case things don't go well.
Things go awry, like a brick wall or a truck.
I'm short on time because I'm on a short leash here. I want to get to one quick thing.
All right.
Please,
okay,
I don't understand the 3D printer thing where people can make weapons.
I don't get this either.
I don't get that. I mean, you take paper, and how does that work?
But it's not paper. That's the thing. It's not paper, right?
No, it's not paper. They're making 3D guns out of hard plastic.
Right.
And so you can actually sort of squirt out this liquid plastic.
Right.
It cures with UV. Or else if you want to make a 3D object which is made out of metal,
right,
what you do is that you lay down the metal, the fine metal powder.
Oh.
You just lay down the metal powder 3D, and then you run a laser beam over it, and it melts it.
Oh.
And you put it a layer at a time. So you can make 3D objects in metal and any kind of object. So what you have to have is something that you can squirt out and distribute, and
right,
then something that cures it and makes it hard. It's a two-step. There's no form.
Long does it take to layer this stuff up? I mean, obviously, depending on how big the thing is, but how long would it take to make something?
It just takes how many layers and how much detail is in it.
Mm-hmm.
But you just turn it on and
you go out and get a sandwich and come back?
And it just makes it overnight. You know, they're making some of the
we need this.
They're making some of the titanium objects for the SpaceX thing with 3D printing.
Wow.
So Elon Musk is there. He's got this touch screen, and he's designing the shape of this thing.
Really?
He sends it to a 3D printer, and they make it in titanium.
Wow.
It's not really paper. I mean, you could do it in paper, but it's not really paper.
See, when I heard 3D printing, You know,
you're thinking you like the same expression, right?
Have I missed out there?
Well, it took me a while to get but I've seen pictures of items right. made on the 3D
And the thing is that because you're doing it a layer at a time, it's like a cross section. You can actually create objects that are inside of other objects. You see, because
I thought I had read that someone had made a firearm.
They had
out of paper.
No, it was out of plastic.
Out of plastic. Okay.
It was actually very hard plastic. They actually made a gun that they could fire out of plastic, and you can download the complete 3D schematic for this gun.
Wow.
and simply hook your computer up to this 3D printer that will print it, and you can print a gun.
How much do these things cost, Doc?
Well, they've come down in price. They now have some. If you just want to do with the plastic cured stuff, they're below $500
now. If you want the howitzer size one,
the Panzer tanks.
Wow.
They also are coming out with models where you pay to print. So there might be one, a very high quality one, that might be like $10,000. But then what you do is you just. They charge maybe $20 an hour,
right,
or whatever it would be, mm-hmm. and you just print your job and put in your credit card, and you just pay for
it's
the
like
time.
Going
you
Kinko's.
Just you, it's really? it's like a 3D printer vending machine.
Is my Luger ready yet?
I want to make a Cessna. Can you print that out for me?
Wow, that's just phenomenal. That's very fun.
So this is a very cost effective way to make 3D
objects.
You know,
all that stuff we used to laugh about and see on Star Trek in the 60s.
It's actually happening.
It's happening. It's crazy. The tricorder, the handheld, all that stuff, and pretty soon I imagine they'll figure out how to. Dissect our molecules so that we can be transported. I'm starting to sound like the doctor.
That's
you
right.
Now, I'm not going to make space elevator parts with the 3D printer.
Now, in fact, the Smithsonian is now releasing 3D files of their works of art. So if there's a particular statue that you like at the art gallery,
right.
just download the 3D thing and print it out.
The
yeah.
statue of David.
You mm-hmm. can print out your own David right at home.
Wow. On that note, Doc, I'm going to leave on a high note.
That's right. Yeah. Although I would probably not print out David.
No, you wouldn't.
No, I don't think.
King Richard.
That's right.
The
good
Lionheart.
Time.
That's right.
Thank you, gentlemen.
You're
okay.
welcome. David, nice to
Bye-bye.
See you.
Yeah.
It is Saturday morning. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. This is Federal News yeah. Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM, HD2. Stand by. More of Tech Talk coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Classroom of the Airways. formerly known as a radio show.
For a short period.
For a short time. And, of course, those of you that have known from the beginning that it was a classroom of the airwaves, you've been paying attention. And I'm ready to assess your knowledge.
Yes.
Now, the assessment's going to be a pop quiz. If you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll get two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room at the Karem Dining Room in Woodbridge, Windsor Falls Church. And all you have to do is listen carefully to what we're talking about. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Herman Hollerith. He is the father of modern machine data processing. Of course, he invented the Hollerith punch card, and he produced equipment for the U.S. Census. Where was his factory located that he used to produce all this tabulating equipment? Where was this factory located, the town that it was located in? If you get the correct answer to that, you'll get two tickets to Fine Dining at the Escoffier or Karem Dining Room. Now, how do they reach us, Jim?
Well, that's a very good point. I put in my announcer voice to tell you if you're calling from west of Buffalo, New York, it's 877-936-9333. From east of Buffalo, New York, it's 877-936-9333. And the wild card line is 877-936-9333. But I'm sure you have other ideas.
That's right. If you're calling in from Iraqi Kurdistan... You can reach us on Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and that'll be forwarded directly to the studio free of charge.
I think they have other things to worry about in Iraq this weekend besides winning the pop quiz.
I think they do.
Yeah.
I think they do, definitely.
All right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how Steve Jobs helped to create the World Wide Web. This is kind of an interesting linkage. He didn't even know that he was doing it.
Huh.
In March of 1989, Tim Berners-Lee is the man who conceived the World Wide Web while working as a software engineer at CERN. Now, this is how this development came about. Tim Berners-Lee was trying to solve a problem that others had tried and failed to solve. Many scientists would come to CERN, to the CERN Research Center, from all over the world. They'd bring their own computers. They'd have all kinds of different operating systems and software. And they would all have their own data and data silos. And none of these machines could talk to each other. And so Tim Berners-Lee thought, you know, these systems all look different. But in fact, when the data gets to the screen, you're all looking at the same stuff on a screen. You're still clicking on bits. So he imagined you could have a thin software layer that would map all of these existing systems into one huge virtual system that could communicate with each other. And he thought, wouldn't that be cool? So he went to his boss, Mike Sendell, and Sendell's response, which is now famous, was vague but interesting. Vague but interesting. So he agreed to let Berners-Lee work on his spare time. And so Tim was allowed to buy one special computer. And he bought the NeXT computer. Remember NeXT, the NEXT computer? That was made by Steve Jobs when he'd been kicked out of Apple. And when you opened it, you got a pre-recorded message from Steve, and it said, "Welcome to NeXT. This is not about personal computing. It's about interpersonal computing."
Oh, boy.
Now, that idea, Tim Berners-Lee was just recently giving a talk. He said that idea of interpersonal computing in Jobs' voice really stuck with him, and it inspired him to hook everything together. And so he felt that this actually did affect his thinking. Now, the NeXT computer really didn't sell that well. At one point, Jobs gave up on it, focused on the NeXT software. Apple bought NeXT in 1996, encouraged Jobs to come back as CEO, and he did. Now, NeXT software now lives on in the Mac OS X operating system. But in 1989, Steve Jobs sold one NeXT machine to one young programmer, and that combination actually changed the world.
Interesting. Now, Doc, this is amazing. We have a whole load of folks this morning who have called into the Summer School of the Airways.
Summer School of the Airways. I love that.
Herb, good morning. You were the first in. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, fine.
Good.
Thank you.
Dr. Schertz, go ahead and ask the question.
Yes. Early in the show, we're talking about Herman Hollerith. Where was the factory located where he made all of his tabulating machines?
31st Street, near the canal in Washington, D.C.
That's correct, right?
Yeah, we'll be close enough, yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Close enough.
Georgetown,
but that's part of Washington, D.C., so we're going to give you credit for that. Herb, very good.
Thanks for listening. Dr. Schertz, tell him what he's won.
You get two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, the Carême Dining Room. Just stay on the line, and they'll get those tickets out to you next week.
Herb, you're a first-time caller, right?
Yeah.
You gotcha. How did you hear about the show?
Oh, I don't know. Just spinning the dial.
Good. Excellent. Very we hope good. You stay with us. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. We will have more of Tech Talk coming up in just a moment here on Federal News Radio. Stay right with us.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. HP is inventing a new kind of computer.
Okay.
And I'm actually very happy to hear about this.
Wow.
HP Labs calls it the machine.
Mm-hmm.
The machine. It's basically a new type of computer architecture that HP engineers say will serve as a replacement for today's designs. They'll be able to crowd an entire data center into something about the size of a small refrigerator. They're looking to make a major, major change in computing technology. They hope to bring the machine to market within the next few years. Now, the machine started to take shape a couple of years ago after Martin Fink was named director of HP Labs. He looked around at all the stuff going on, and he says, you know, if we'd put all these different research elements together into one integrated system, we might be able to create a better computing system. So Fink and his associates decided to brief the HP CEO, Meg Whitman, the idea of assembling all this technology to form the machine. It was a two-hour presentation held a year and a half ago. They laid out how the computer might work. And get this, they said it's going to take 75% of HP Labs personnel.
Wow.
Dedicated to this project for 5 years. I mean, it's a high-risk, go-for-the-wall gamble.
But they're going nowhere without this, right?
And Whitman looked at the CFO and she said, Mr. CFO, get them the money. And she approved it. So they started working on it. It has three different components to it: memory, optical links, and a new operating system. Memory has been the big bugaboo for computers. You've got slow memory, which we call hard drives, and then we've got faster memory, which would be dynamic RAM, DRAM, or flash. And that's faster memory, and the CPU talks to that, and we want to store something long term. You've got to send it out to the hard drive. But there's a new kind of memory that HP has been working on. It's the memristor. It's like a combination of memory resistor.
Okay.
Memristor. And so a resistor is just something you have got resistance, and it has a certain amount of resistance. You put the current through it, you get a voltage across it. Well, a memristor, you can basically change the resistance in order to remember something or not remember something. So a memristor consists of grids of wires with a stack of thin layers of a material such as titanium oxide at each intersection. When currents apply to the wires, the material's resistance is altered. Now, this state can hold after the current is removed. In other words, it remembers it. So at this point, the device could remember zeros or ones, and it's very fast. Now, HP can build these chips using traditional semiconductor equipment in very, very high density. Now, this would remove the need for conventional slow disk, fast memory systems that we have now where you got fast cache and it dumps stuff off to a disk. What they would do, they would just pack all the machine memory right on silicon right there by the CPU. We'd have no hard drive.
Oh, wow.
And so everything would be, you could achieve everything super fast. You could just put it right into memory, pull it right out, and you wouldn't have to have all this buffer and busing of data all over the place. So that new memory architecture is going to give them memory right by the processor. That's the first breakthrough. The second breakthrough is in optical links. Now, they've been trying to use silicon photonics. This is photons, of course, that's light. So, and they're trying to get light pathways through silicon so they can communicate with optics instead of using copper wires. So if they can get all of these people, if they can get all these components, you know, communicating with fiber optics or some sort of optics, these are basically waveguides made in silicon. That's why they call them silicon photonics. Mm-hmm. They can get much, much speedier intercommunication between all these components. So now we got fast memory. We've got now fast communication channels, so we're talking about a huge step up. And if you eliminate the copper, everything can shrink down further.
I was
going to
say, so instead of having wires inside of your computer, you will now have fiber optic cable, right?
Fiber optic, or it might be waveguides embedded in silicon uh-huh. photonics. You won't actually see glass. I don't think they'd be glass,
uh-huh.
but they would be waveguides in silicon, so-called silicon photonics. Then they have to write a new operating system. You see, with new memory and new networking technologies, you need a new operating system because most of the applications written for the past 50 years have been taught to wait for data. They assume that the memory systems feeding the computer chips are slow, so they've got this wait and hold, and then they have to put it in, cache it here, put it there. So they decide they need one team that's going to design an open-source machine operating system that will assume the availability of high-speed, constant memory storage. And so they believe that if they can put all three of these things together in one architecture, that they can actually, in the size of a small refrigerator, replace a whole data warehouse.
Good grief.
And so I'll tell you, it's great to see HP going for broke and trying to really produce some real solid innovation. I'm really happy to see that.
So thinking down from this is going to be something in, you know, a data center, mm-hmm. what application would this have to personal computers? Would this be something that would make, you know, the PC even more obsolete? We'd be walking around with this because it sounds like it's going to be portable, right?
I think it'll be expensive. So, I mean, I think this will be extremely expensive.
So this is going to take a while for it to trickle down.
I think it's going to be replace expensive data centers.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think it's really going to target it for a consumer machine.
Okay.
Now, I could see, though, once they ramp up and get this thing at production, and production costs bring down component costs, I could see all of a sudden people could have a data center in their home, and I think the prices would come down. So this is, mm-hmm. I've heard about memristors for a long time. That technology has been around for a long time. I think the inspiration, and I've heard of this silicon photonics. I've heard all of these things. I think the genius here is that HP Labs is linking them all together into an integrated computer architecture. I just love to see that kind of technology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, HP, or rather, should we take in a break now?
No, let's go. Let's go ahead.
Okay, FBI is using face recognition. The FBI is building what it calls the Next Generation Identification Database. Now, it's primarily gathering mug shots from local law enforcement agencies. The software is being built by MorphoTrust. MorphoTrust. I guess you can morph in. I don't know where that name came from. Now, that's a company that helped the State Department create their own face recognition database. You know where the first face recognition database came from?
No.
Casinos in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because they, you know, some guys, some high rollers coming in here, always wins at blackjack because he counts cards. They recognize his face. Soon as he shows up, they kick him out.
Yep.
So the only way for these guys to, you know, to be able to come back in, they'd have to put on mustaches. They'd have to have all sorts of disguises to
get
back in.
Or plastic surgery.
Or plastic surgery. But then it only works once. You know. So now at the moment, the State Department can't share their data with the FBI, but FBI Director James Comey said, well, he wouldn't rule out the possibility. I'm thinking they're going to just try to bring them together and put this thing together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, these are the guys always worried about privacy, contends that many innocent people will be swept into the database, which is expected to reach 52 million images by next year. The agency's head said he wasn't sure if the EFF's claims were accurate, nor would he rule out that people's driver's license photos might end up in the pool.
Wow.
They're just going to gather everything.
Of course.
When he asked, well, what about driver's license photos? He says, I think there could be some that get swept up. I'm really not too sure about that.
But with the NSA stuff,
I'm not really too sure about that. You know, there could be some pictures there. And face recognition is getting better and better. Now, wait until we got surveillance cameras everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're going to start taking pictures and tracking face recognition. They're already doing that in Europe. When you walk around, you know, they can
tell who's a bad guy just walking down the street.
Yeah, so they can. You know, so Big Brother will really be tracking you all the way along.
You know what I'd take away from this?
What?
The name of this. So Morpho Trust is a bad name for a bank.
Yeah, Morpho Trust. I think that is, yeah. Let's morph your trust after the first robbery.
All right.
So let's talk about the World Cup Gold Line technology.
Yeah.
I would talk about that briefly.
Uh-huh.
It's the first time that they introduced this in gold line detection technology, FIFA. Now, this is the FIFA is the source of the organization that controls it, and that's the International Federation for Football Association, but it's a French name, and so this is
you English
FIFA.
It up for us.
I tried to English it up. I didn't pronounce it at all well.
Of course, well,
and so they accepted bids for this. They accepted bids for this goal line technology, which I told you earlier had 14 cameras,
mm-hmm.
and they awarded a probationary contract to a German company, Goal Control. Now, the goal control system costs around $250,000 per stadium. And as I said, it uses 14 high-speed cameras to track the field position. So during Sunday's game, for instance, between Honduras and France, it took just 1 minute for the audience to validate that a goal, which was actually very questionable, was actually correct. So
wow.
It's already working properly.
Good. And we have a few. We're about another minute or so here, Doc.
Okay. Let's see. eBay Valet has now an iPhone app. The eBay Valet promises to let eBay users sell things on eBay easily. And it automates the steps of the selling process. It was designed to make online selling easier and more approachable. It's called eBay Valet. It was designed and developed by IIC. Israel Innovation Center, which is a unit within the Innovation and New Ventures Organization in Tel Aviv, which is part of eBay. It's a pilot, and they don't really plan to do anything more into this. It makes selling easy to get started. You just take a picture of the item in question. It looks up the value. It sets it up, and it sells it for you. And you get 70% of the profit, and they keep 30% for selling it. They put that right into your PayPal account. I'll tell you, Tech Talk ended so quickly.
It did.
We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu and check out Stratford's programs by going to stratford.edu and tell them that you heard about those programs on Tech Talk Radio.
If you tuned in later, would like to hear this program again, Tech Talk will be rebroadcast here on Federal News Radio today at 2 o'clock. We'll see you next week.
Commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We have Nationals baseball on the radio for you later today. The Nats against the Braves. First pitch at 7:05, pregame at 6:30 here on Federal News Radio. Rainy day in D.C. with a high close to 80 degrees. Right now we've got rain outside our studios in Northwest Washington. It is 68 degrees at 10 o'clock. This is Federal News Radio.